Welcome to Idle Red Hands, a podcast from Japan about gaming and gamer life.
And welcome back to Idle Red Hands. I'm Chris.
I'm Wayne.
I'm La. It's the first time filming in our new studio.
I just realized leaning in that this table's really small.
Yeah,
it's really also tiny. Quite rickety.
I don't think I've ever felt closer to you guys.
Is that a good thing or a bad thing?
So today, it's the first time filming at
Chris recording.
Record what?
Because you've been
retarded.
Recently.
Yeah.
Do you want that question answered? No. All right.
It's our first time recording at my new place. It might be our last time as well. But
see how it goes. Mm.
And it's pre-bachelor party as well.
Yes, it is.
So in a few hours, we'll be starting a bachelor party. That makes us either supremely dedicated or supremely sad.
It all depends on the way that night ends up, right?
I just mean the fact that we're doing the podcast before a bachelor party. All right, strippers, if you guys could just wait on the couch.
Yeah, I wish.
And be quiet.
Trixie, what did you think of that show, you know? That game.
Would it be like Jewel or like Savannah? Mercedes?
What, Trixie was a stripper now?
Oh,
so, don't have high enough class of strippers.
That's just kind of low class.
There's some huge news in the gaming and geek world. So there's DC,
mm-hmm.
DC Comics. I'm sure it's not news for people that are really into comics, but DC's going to basically reboot everything and start 52 titles at number one.
Yeah, absolutely everything.
And they're going to also really support the digital medium, which is going to be great for us in Japan, because I'm a trade paperback kind of guy. Oh yeah, did I mention this the first podcast that we're drinking? Would explain some of the slurring.
Some, not all.
And I'm a trade paperback guy because I have to be. On the one hand, I can pick and choose the titles, read the reviews, but on the other hand, I'm like a year behind on storylines.
So
I checked out the 52 titles, and some look really good.
Cool.
Demon Knights looked really good. A lot of Bat titles.
Yeah,
certainly
a
not
lot.
Cutting those down. There's like Batwoman and Batgirl.
Yeah, oh, wow. Not to mention like Batman, The Dark Knight, like something like Detective Files.
Yep, Detective
Batman
Comics
Robin
is still around, which is good. Batman, those are old ones.
Yeah.
Dark Knight, yeah, and then they've got
Batwoman, Batgirl.
Yeah, it was just the Batwoman and the Batgirl that really got me. I was, do you need both? Like, one's going to be, like, what, struggling through puberty? And then there was, Batwing?
Actually,
yeah.
So Africa's, I know Marvel Comics has the Black Panther, their African superhero, but then they have Batwing.
What was the one, though? Black Lightning, wasn't it?
He was a hero.
Are we going to get into a hero versus the hero?
No, he was a African-American hero, but he wasn't really big, Black Lightning.
I don't know much, anywhere near as much as comics as you do, but I seem to remember, like, Black Lightning, wasn't he kind of one of the first black superheroes?
I don't know.
Like in the 70s?
He might have been one of the first. I know, it's arguable. I don't think Black Panther was the first, because I think there was one. There's actually an African-American superhero who... No, actually, Black Panther is a African superhero, but there's actually a black superhero who predated him a little bit, but he was only around for a couple issues.
Oh, okay.
But anyway, I just thought Blackwing.
Batwing.
Apologies out there.
I'm partially offended.
How is that offensive? But he's like Africa's superhero. Like, Africa gets one superhero.
Yeah, and as we discussed, it's like, how many superheroes does Gotham get versus how many superheroes does an entire continent get?
Yeah. It's like, well, can you not just say he's, like, Kenya's superhero? Or, or a city like Nairobi's or Johannesburg? Like, Johannesburg, it's got a lot of crime. I did some research on the World Cup.
And it's capital of the world, was it?
Well, if it's not number one in rapes, it is really up there. It is top three.
It's
top
contending.
Three. And it's up there with homicides as well.
And doesn't it have, like, that underground prison underneath the city?
No, that's where the Muhammad Ali and
yeah, that's what I'm thinking of.
That's Rumble in the Jungle, and that's further north. Maybe not. I don't know. It could be South Africa, but it could be further north.
Somewhere
else. I'm not a big boxing person, so.
Not a big crime person?
Yeah. What you gotta think?
But when
I think,
it comes to rapes, though.
I researched the World Cup, and you're researching about the South Africa, and it just said, oh, by the way, they're like, God, a massive country to rape. So you could, like, what is this bowing? He's gonna keep calling the Justice League. He's like, yeah, send help.
Anybody.
Now. Anybody. Yeah. Could somebody, like, handle, like, oh, I don't know, all the other countries in Africa? Did you realize there's more than one country? You realize Africa's not a country. It's a continent.
Yeah. My joke was the criminals aren't even going to have original names. Is it going to be, like, rapist? I think you said, like, rapist number one, rapist number two.
I'm up to 360. Can we get, like, come on, can the Joker make an appearance?
Yes. I'd said,
riddle me this, Batman. Name the capital of Liberia. Ooh, gosh. I don't know that one.
Where did Muhammad Ali box and everything?
But all the Bat titles notwithstanding, I'm really, really, really excited. I think it's a wise move of DC.
What are you going to get first?
I think Justice League rolls out. I'm tempted to like wait until the digital copies come out a week later after the print copies roll out. Mm-hmm. And get they get like a discounted price and get like number one of all of the all 52 just to sample them.
Yeah, that's not a bad idea.
Yeah. Might turn out like, wow, that Batwing is amazing. Yeah.
Yeah, not that I'm a big comic book collector, but if they're doing a lot of the digital stuff, I kind of wonder what's going to happen to the I don't know what you would call it, the secondary market.
Like the collectability.
Like the collectability of it, because, I mean,
the collectors are going to be collectors, I think.
Right, the collectors are going to be collectors.
What's the digital file worth, you know?
I'm wondering, what's the print version worth when anybody and everybody can sort of
get role-playing games, PDFs. Mm-hmm. And the thing is, sometimes, we use it as a sampler. And if we really like that...
That's true.
That role-playing game, we don't sit there and, like, print it out and, like, color-print it.
Well, I've tried that. It doesn't work very
well. Yeah, it doesn't work very well. You pay... Probably more when you actually do it.
Yeah.
So you go out, you get the book.
Well, having the physical book is really worth it.
Yeah, absolutely. I still don't like looking around through different PDFs.
It's still useful to have it, the PDF, I think, but nothing beats actually flipping through the pages really quickly to find a rule for speed.
Absolutely.
Mm-hmm. So, plus, I feel kind of guilty about getting a PDF and then not buying the book. So, yeah, if I like it, I usually get the book, the actual book, but...
And what are we ranting about today, Wayne?
We're ranting about the HBO series Game of Thrones.
Woo!
Yeah. So, anyway, yeah. Like we said, we were going to do one, and we finally finished watching episode 10. So the series is over, and...
thoughts, yeah.
Yeah.
So what we'll do is we'll go through casting, who we thought was well cast, who we thought...
sucked.
Less so. and also talk about our favorite scenes, our least favorite scenes, and our overall impressions, and kind of some predictions without doing any spoilers.
Yeah.
That was our challenge.
Yeah. Because one of these three people kind of hasn't finished book two.
But that's fair enough for people who tune into the... You know, we're talking about season one, so we will... Do our predictions without...
spoiling anything, hopefully.
Spoiling anything, yeah. And when we talk about casting and that, we will do with an eye to not spoil anything.
Yeah, which could be difficult, but I think you say it now, big spoiler alert, if you haven't read book one, if you haven't seen the TV series, you probably want to skip this episode.
Oh, okay,
because
we're
going to spoil book one and season one.
Right, so we think that, the book and the season one is fair game.
Yes.
Well, what we're talking about spoilers are the subsequent books.
And if we do happen to spoil anything, we'll be sure to put a beep in the episode later on or something.
Or you'll just hear Chris go, "Oh, shit! No!"
All right, so... course, there's a lot of characters, and we might not give our opinion on the your favorite character.
Should we go best and worst?
I think that's going to be hard. Okay. Anyway.
Yeah, sure. So, who do you think we're particularly... Well, we'll start positive.
Because we've got a long way to slide the negative.
Who do you think was particularly well cast? Like real standouts. Like, not, meh, it was okay, he did the job. Mm. But who were some standouts?
Great Wayne? Choice.
Who'd you... Chris started to speak?
Yes.
Oh, well, whichever. He's by all means.
No, go ahead, Chris, because I got to think
about
that.
You're the Bachelor.
Peter Dinklage. I really liked him as an actor. He's a great actor, and I think he plays the part of Tyrion really well.
Right.
I don't think he's necessarily the best pick for Tyrion, because Tyrion's supposed to be grotesque, and he doesn't look particularly grotesque.
No, he's a nice looking guy. Yeah. He's a bit older, and I was saying after we were watching season 10, I wonder if they raised, because everybody's age is a little bit older.
It's odd, like,
and then it just kind of struck me when I saw him talking to his dad, his father, Tywin Lannister, and just like, yeah, maybe they just. I mean, there's a lot of reasons why they would have raised the age. Right. One thing, to get the quality of actor.
Yeah.
Right. One of them could be is, obviously, there was two actors that George R. R. Martin really wanted. One was Peter Dinklage for Tyrion, and he's just an older guy. He's a good 10 years older than Tyrion.
Which is actually kind of interesting, because if you had made him more grotesque like the character was supposed to be, you could easily hide his age under the makeup.
I hadn't thought about that. That's a good point.
But then again, they went pretty minimalistic. Like, in the books, Tyrion has different colored eyes, but they didn't do that either. Not as a criticism, just as a...
Yeah, I didn't think that was important. Wayne was like, and his eyes are the same color. I'm like, who cares?
You know what? I'll say this.
Because contacts can be annoying to wear.
Yeah, okay, fair enough. It's
never been a real big issue in any of the books. Spoiler.
Yeah. I'll say this. Like, people who've listened to past episodes, right, they've heard me kind of complain, and I believe the phrase was slapping my head because things were so far off.
That's because you slapped your head.
Yeah, I did. You know, before the podcast, I watched all the episodes again, knowing that they weren't going to be like the book. And so I've kind of calmed down a little bit, so I realized certain things don't matter. But... you know, when you enjoy a book as much as I did with a Game of Thrones, little things like that are going to stand out. So, yeah, I was the one who raised the fact that he doesn't have two different color eyes. But I've since kind of calmed down and said, okay, well, I'll just try and evaluate the series on its own merits. No, I mean, like, the whole series as a whole, rather than comparing it to the book, even though certain things were still glaring.
I agree. I think Tyrion was well cast.
Yeah.
Tyrion Lannister was well cast. And I've said this to you guys privately, but I think the real find, the absolute find in this series is Aidan Gillen, Littlefinger, Peter Baelish.
Yes, I agree.
And the reason is that Tyrion is a dwarf.
Mm.
So what you're going to do is you're basically, unless you want to do all the CG and the false perspective,
right,
you are going to take all of the...
dwarf actors?
Different PC term?
Well, is dwarf still okay?
Is it little person?
Okay, my understanding, no offense to anybody, is that dwarf is a type of little person, and a midget is another type.
Yeah, I think I believe one has regular-sized hands and the other... doesn't.
It's the proportion of the limbs to the body. Anyway. So you're going to take all your... And I'm sure they could have also had the midgets as well, but you're going to take all your little actors.
Right.
Sorry.
How about just say you would have taken all the people of the correct stature? No?
All your stature.
Okay, I'm going to say all the dwarf actors that you have, and you're going to pick the best of the bunch. And Peter Dinklage has done movies where he has... It didn't matter that he was a dwarf or not. He was basically cast for whatever. I think the station master. I can't remember how important him being a dwarf was to that. It didn't. When I watched it, it didn't seem to be a big factor.
Mm.
So yeah, obviously the guy can act, and it doesn't. He doesn't. You know, who's he gonna? Who else is gonna get the guy? Kenny Baker, who was in R2-D2.
Mm.
You know. Whereas Littlefinger, he's slight, but he's basically a nondescript guy. So you have a wide pool of actors to choose from. And just on the one hand, that means you have so many quality actors to choose from. But on the other hand, how do you pick the guy that's perfect for it?
Mm-hmm.
And the fact that they plucked Aidan Gillen, who was in The Wire, and he was fantastic in The Wire. And when I read the books now, because I'm rereading them in preparation for A Dance with Dragons, Littlefinger now looks like Aidan Gillen, probably more than any other character. Like, it's actually changed for me, the way he looks. Mm.
Wow. Actually, it's the same for me, I think. Yeah, kind of.
Yeah.
And the way the mannerisms and the way he talks, it switches. And a lot of the characters who were with the actors are doing a fine job. It hasn't flipped for me, like the appearance, because I've already had that ingrained. Whereas Littlefinger was always very nondescript to me.
Yeah, that's true. Well, I think he's supposed to be nondescript.
Yeah, and like every scene that he's in has been quality, even though we're going to talk about one of the scenes later on. He's always been good in them, and he's always been sensational. So I, to me, that was the absolute pick of the bunch.
Was the of actors that did do a particularly good job, I think Caitlin actually is really, what was her name again? You've
got it. Michelle Fairley.
Yeah, yeah. I think she's just brought a lot to the role she plays because she has to play a really emotional character at times, very strong and very weak, and she shows a really good range. Mm. As far as actors who really match their characters, I think both of the Targaryens were very well cast.
Oh yeah.
Yeah, I was going to say the guy who plays Viserys.
Yeah.
Oh, he was fantastic. And there's the. Waymar Royce, who was in the prologue in the book, and he's in the first few minutes of the first episode. And I'm not going to say that he was perfect for that part, because you probably could have cast a lot of different people for that part.
Because it's so short.
But man, he did such a fantastic job of that part. Yeah. I wish that they had cast him in a different role.
That's something else.
That actor. Oh gosh, and I don't.
Suggested one before. I forget who.
I suggested it was Theon Greyjoy. I thought he could have done it. Not, and it's no knock against Alfie Allen for Theon Greyjoy, who I put in the middle of the bunch. Mm. Like, he hasn't been worst or best,
right.
Although I think he's been put in some of the worst scenes.
Yeah,
and he's done as good as he can. Right. But wow, when I saw that Waymar Royce guy, I'm sorry. Maybe we'll tag it in the show notes or something. I just thought fantastic. Like he did such a good job. And I just thought there was so much. I wanted to see more of them.
Yeah. It's kind of too bad you're not going to see more of them.
Yeah. Spoiler!
No spoiler. We all know. Everybody's seen that. He dies.
Well, anybody who hasn't read the prologue or watched the first few minutes.
Yeah.
I think Cersei, Lena Headey.
Headey.
Yeah, I always say Headey, too. Yeah. Headey, fantastic. I mean, in episode 10, she looks stunning.
Yeah, she's hot.
she's an attractive actress, and I think because she's an important character in future seasons, she's going to be able to. Yeah, oh, she doesn't die in episode 10. She's going to be able to carry that role and do everything that's required, and that's pretty exciting. Hmm. So she definitely stands out. Yeah, Viserys again. Yeah,
I didn't like him at first.
Well, you're not supposed to like Viserys.
No, I mean, like, I didn't kind of like who they cast
for. I thought he was perfect.
He grew on me. And then, then at the end, you know, the kind of the last scene with him, you know, where he kind of, you know, flips over and, you know, right before he dies, and he's like, oh, you know, that's all I wanted. I just wanted kind of, you know, respect. And
he's been perfect from scene one for me. I thought fantastic. And he's, again, I don't think you could have cast him in another role because he was so perfect for that one, like physically so perfect.
What's, sorry, I don't remember the name of the character, the bear?
Oh,
the commander of the Night's Watch.
Oh, Gior Mormont.
Yeah,
yeah.
What's did we get his name?
Yeah, we were gonna have that.
The thing. I thought we were.
Hold on, listeners.
Yeah, what was the actor?
Yeah, he's really good in it.
Yeah, well, like,
you know what I was saying in episode 10, his son Jorah Mormont, and actually the guy who's playing his father as well. I said his voice is really good for it.
Mm-hmm. Well, I was gonna say about him, he actually changed the way that the actor looked in my mind. I had an image of...
Oh, okay. That's good.
Yeah. Like a younger-looking guy when I read the book.
Really?
Yeah, not young, don't get me wrong, but like still he had a black beard.
Oh, really? Because I thought they made a point in the book of saying he has like a big white beard that pretty much goes down to his waist.
Which you mentioned before, so I think maybe I misread that or forgot about it or something, but I always pictured him different. But now I picture him as he is in the TV show. So.
Well, that being said...
Yeah, I would say the Lord Commander, he's been really well cast. Mm. And I was saying him and the guy they cast for his son to play Jorah Mormont have really good voices because they are British fantasy.
Yeah.
And I think they've kind of made some mistakes. I'll say mistakes. Where they've got these guys speaking like...
You're taking somebody, the piss.
Yeah, you're taking the piss.
Yeah.
Step off.
That felt really jarring.
Yeah.
It kind of took you out of the fantasy.
Yeah, when it was Theon Greyjoy. He's got that line, are you taking the piss?
Yeah.
Spare people
what episode
East Side was London accent.
Was that like episode number 6 or something? Because they hadn't, it felt really jarring. It almost like they hadn't done it before, and it just seemed like they did a lot of that in whatever episode happened.
And they did some of it in episode 10 as well, where they used the C word. In Canada, and I think in America, the C word, which you call a woman,
it's pretty
taboo. So we tend not to say it, but British guys seem to be a lot freer with that word than we would. But when he called that again, I just think of like some, some yob from England, as opposed to Westeros. Mm. Whereas Jorah, where the Mormont actors, and a lot of the other actors, I should say,
Sean Bean does that well as well. He's used to that.
Yeah, well, they kind of like fantasy British. Yeah. Just, you know, like fantasy Nazi. Or sorry, British Nazi.
Fantasy Nazi.
Sorry, I meant to say British Nazi. Okay. You know, it's like...
my campaign notes.
It's like a very clipped British accent, maybe like received pronunciation or something like that. But it's... You don't think of regions of England or regions of the British Isles. Mm. You actually just think, oh, I'm in a fantasy world. Mm. And I think they've dropped it. I know why they're doing it, you know, show that, oh, these guys are really rough, but it just kind of takes you out of the fantasy. Yeah. So I wish they could do kind of a... Even like some of the northern guys, they just kind of sound like Scottish or northern English.
Or so like it's almost too like, much blood.
It's like... it's. I know that War of the Roses was one of the... kind of templates or inspirations for Song of Ice and Fire, but come on, like, don't drop it that much. You know?
I'm just picturing like the Tullys or something with a Scouser accent or something. Calm down.
boy, step off. Yeah. You just expect them like, we wearing like football scars or something like that.
Yeah.
Oh, you're
a Lannister fan, eh?
You're a Lannister fan.
Oh, you Lannister hooligans.
Lannister United, eh?
Oh, damn, money. We'd have some sauce, too, for Braavos.
I'd just like to apologize to all of our British listeners for our accents.
We don't have any now. So when you go to the worst cast?
Yeah.
No, sorry, can I just do one more?
Oh, yeah. You got a lot, don't you?
Varys?
Yeah, very good.
Conleth Hill. One of my favorite characters in the book, or in the series, and I'm really glad that he was done justice. Hmm. Whereas Littlefinger, I'm going to say why I named him number one, wasn't one of my favorite characters. He was a good character. He's a great character. He wasn't one of my favorite, and the actor has actually elevated that character.
I got one more too as well. Arya. The actress is really, really, really good in that.
Should I say though? It's not a spoiler.
No, it's not a spoiler because it happens in the series.
They do mention it at the end of the series, where Yoren, the Night's Watch guy, wants her to betray a boy.
Right.
And he cuts her hair, and he grabs her arm after cutting her hair, which kind of I guess was convincing. It looks a little bit like 70s glam rock. Grabs her, and the shirt just kind of
tightens
across her chest, and she has breasts.
Yeah.
Like.
I think that
not getting into pedo land here, but I was like, oh, she has breasts, because I had never noticed before that the actress was old enough to have breasts, and I'm like, whoa, and then you just can't stop. Okay, this is gonna sound real pedo, but you can't stop noticing it. So she's supposed to be betraying a boy.
Yeah, she's supposed to be only like 8 years old in the book, and where she wouldn't have any hint of being a girl. You know, and that, like, having read the books, right, and sometimes it's hard to chop the story into the books, right? So, kind of like looking ahead, knowing what happens, I've read all the books, sometimes it's hard to forget that. But knowing that she had to play a boy, throughout watching the entire series, I always thought, her hair is too long. Nobody is going to mistake her for a boy.
Yeah, even before they cut her hair.
Even before they cut her hair.
I was willing to let that go until, maybe she just... It just happened, like, because maybe she didn't have them when they started filming. I don't know.
Who knows?
But now it's like, but yeah, I agree. Before that, I did say before that, it's like, oh, yeah, I really like Arya. Mm. She's actually elevated the character of Maya as that actress. And now I'm like, whoa, she's a little lady.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And she has, I don't know if this is a spoiler, she has to play a quote-unquote boy for a while. And I don't see that happening.
No, like, she looks like a kid that's going to have, like, a real growth spurt, too. Mm.
Tape.
That's what I was thinking. I was actually thinking of the Star Wars.
And that's
Wars
unfortunate
thing
for
they,
the actress,
they had to tape Carrie Fisher. I think they're going
to
have to do it too.
Yeah.
Or I hope they do it because she has to play a boy. And are we supposed
honestly,
to...
her voice isn't that boyish. It is kind of girly.
Yeah. Well, that's the thing. If she were younger, as with the books, it would be really easy to pass off. But yeah, there's.
But honestly, a lot
her
of
skills
the,
as an actress, she's very, very good.
And all the child actresses. That they have really done well.
Even the few scenes they've shown with Rickon.
okay, I can't say Rickon. Rickon? Yeah, that one.
Exactly. Who? Ghost of Winterfell.
And I would say, you know, he would have been in my worst until I see him acting. But Jack Gleeson, who I don't think looks like Joffrey.
Oh.
But what an acting champion that guy
I've been a fan of his from the very beginning. In the
I think what did it for me. it wasn't, he never really not acted like Joffrey, but he so didn't look like Joffrey that, it, you know, you kind of, you know, you get the fan rage and you're like, oh, that's not Joffrey.
Yeah, I think I had that
but
too.
He has been so sensational in all his scenes that I don't care.
Two scenes in particular, well, actually, there's the most recent episode as well.
What, when he forced Sansa to look at her father's head on the spikes?
No, when the...
when he claps when the singer?
That was very good. Scene. Yeah,
he did that really.
I think
when you slap him on the throne, he does.
Yeah, when he leaned back in the throne, he's like...
That kid's owning that
space.
Which
do you prefer more? But there's also one where, like, right after he became king, he was making some proclamation for that, and he cracked his voice in the middle of it. It's like, whoa, that was really good there.
I think the scene that did it for me for Joffrey was when... with Sansa, like that.
When he gives her the necklace.
Yeah, when he gives her the necklace. And I thought, look, you know, he did really well. Really convinced me. He really gave some depth to Joffrey. Yeah, and then every scene where he's been on the throne has been fantastic. That kid can act.
At the beginning, towards the beginning.
He convinces me that he is Joffrey.
Yeah, like, I've warmed up to him now, but I think towards the beginning of the series, where he had that scene with his mother, with Cersei, where she's kind of like, you know, fixing the wound on his arm that Nymeria gave her, and it was kind of the fan rage. Like, that scene is not in the book.
Yeah.
And that kind of soured me a little bit on they've the Joffrey
some
character.
Hints. It's like, they've said, I think what it was in Pycelle, he's like rambling on Grandmaster. Grandmaster? Pycelle. And he says, oh, yeah, the king is, like, King Joffrey, he's got some...
He's got a strong military mind.
Yeah, strong military mind. And they were trying to set that. They're trying to give him, like, a little dimension. I mean, the book, Joffrey doesn't have a strong million in the first book.
Did you see his...
Forever! Spoiler.
Did you see his face when Sansa refused to look at the head? Or when, I think when she said, how long do I have to look? Like, his face went beet red.
The kid, he's
good with expressions. His problem is, and that's why I really like the Sansa-Joffrey scene, is that just the type of face he has, it's kind of a sour face.
Mm-hmm.
Where it's very good for anger or sadness, like he would do really good, but he's not a naturally smiley person.
Mm.
I would say, and I understand I'm not a naturally smiley person myself. You want to be like very outgoing in that, I think that's real tough for him to do because he's going to have his face type is not that, and he was so gentle in that that scene, and he was so convincing.
Honestly, I was kind of distracted in that scene because I was thinking that they.
It's not in the book. It's not in the book.
No, not. I was thinking that's one more. They kind of rectified a little bit. But I was thinking that's one more scene that they took away from the guy who plays the Hound, and I think they're really giving him, or they're really playing him a disservice.
That Sansa and Joffrey.
I was thinking that scene where they go up. I was thinking.
So which scene are you talking about?
The last one in episode 10. Where
on the bridge.
Look on the bridge, look at the heads.
I didn't mind. They changed the scene.
They changed it, and...
They needed to make it more explicit. So the Hound, basically... So in the book, on the scene, Game of Thrones is got a point of view, A Song of Fire and Ice, a point of view character. So it's Sansa's chapter.
Right.
So you know what she's thinking at the time.
Mm.
And she's looking at Joffrey, and she wants to...
She's essentially going to push him off.
So she could happen, and she's still hemming and hawing whether or not she should do it. And the Hound kind of gets in her way, and it's a little ambiguous. It's ambiguous. So is the Hound getting in her way because he...
is going to protect Joffrey.
Protecting Joffrey, or is he getting in her way to protect prevent Sansa from doing it to protect her?
Right.
And I was kind of expecting that, because I read the Time magazine critic saying... ask that question. Mm-hmm. Oh, what do you think? Which one? And in the book, that's a really good question because it's very ambiguous. And I thought it was less ambiguous here.
Yeah. But I was just thinking, even before that...
In the series, he grabs her.
Right.
So he's definitely stopping her.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And he wipes... But then he wipes her lip. So it's very gentle. And I thought it was basically saying he's preventing...
her from pushing Joffrey over to protect her.
Yeah.
That's what I got out of it as well.
Yeah.
But that's what I got out of the book, too. So.
And I also got that out of the book, so...
I did as well, but I was just thinking that I thought it was...
I thought it just needed to be that more explicit. Because if he had, like, kind of walked there and, like, adjusted something...
Right.
Then people might not have... Even though they did the, look at Joffrey, look at the ground...
Look angry.
Look at Joffrey, look at the ground. Even though they did that, that... I still think they needed to do that one step further. Right. So people who haven't read the book, I agree.
I was just under the impression, and it's been a while since I read the book. I'm reading the other one, so things are kind of getting mixed up in my mind. I thought the Hound specifically told Sansa to give Joffrey what he wants even before they went out on the walk.
I don't remember.
Maybe I'm wrong.
I'm going to agree that the Hound, unfortunately, and that's the reason why we're not going to
getting the shaft. In my opinion,
of all the characters, the Hound is getting the biggest shaft. In my opinion, and that's why we can't say that Rory McCain is. He seems good, but we can't say he's great because they took all his lines.
Yeah, they took a lot away from
him. That said, you know, I remember you mentioned before that the Hound, the way he starts the series and the way he gets, not the ends of the series, but the way he is in the later books, is a very different character. You said he even thought to the point where R.R. Martin thought he kind of rethought the character and changed how he is. Maybe that's something important that the director or screenwriter thought about. Maybe that's something that even R.R. Martin wanted to say himself. So they're trying to show that change.
I think what Lyle was saying is the scenes that they took away in the book are actually what humanized the Hound. They're what make you realize...
How many were those in the first book?
He didn't have a lot of scenes, but he had a very important... He didn't have a lot of scenes in the first book.
We might as well just say it. The scene that we're talking about is...
We're kind of throwing away
our structure. Fair
enough. We'll come back to this.
Okay. We've already done 40 minutes on just characters.
Yeah, all right.
Worst characters?
Wrap it up quickly. Worst characters?
Robert so we get and Jorgen. The
scenes. Huh?
Robert and Jorgen?
No, I think...
he's not entitled to his opinion. Sorry, those were wrong answers.
Those are wrong answers. Sorry.
No.
I think...
Robert played... the thing about Robert is, like, in the book, there's kind of two Roberts. There's the Robert who conquered the Seven Kingdoms and became king, like the big, strong guy. And then there's the Robert afterwards, where he's kind of gone soft, gone to fat, and stuff. I think the guy plays that second Robert really well.
Mark Addy.
But I can't see in him like a conqueror.
Yeah, exactly. No disrespect to Mark Addy, but sorry, not to take the words out of your mouth, Lyle. But I think I'm going anyway. So I believe you said the Robert in the book is like a huge warrior that has gone to fat, and the actor they chose was a fat guy who has gone to fat.
Yeah.
And no disrespect against Mark Addy, but
fine actor. But yeah, I mean he. He was in the Robin Hood movie as Friar Tuck.
Yeah.
And that's what he is. Sorry. He's a fat guy. He's probably been big all his life. Oh, I forgot my other favorite.
Can't go back now.
Yep. No, I'm going back. the guy they got for Samwell Tarly, John Bradley, is amazing.
Fantastic.
Yeah, he is fantastic. Good. And again, I think he's one of the ones where he's...
You're speaking quicker, so you can get it all in.
Chris jumps on me.
I was laughing at how it's connected, but we're talking about a fat guy, and then you go that way.
Oh, yeah.
Speaking of
fine actors.
You need to confuse midgets and dwarfs again now?
Sorry. Oh, man. I really got to research that next time. Anyway, one of my favorite characters in the book, Samwell Tarly, and that character, and I said one of the reasons why I really liked the actor, other than the fact that he's a good actor, is that he is very likable.
Yes.
Scene one, even though he has all those flaws, and we'll say being fat is a flaw, and definitely that's played up in the book, yes. So please don't send your hate mail to George R. R. Martin. You got to understand, why would Jon Snow, or why do other people
Why would anybody like this guy?
Yeah, warm up to this guy who's a craven, a coward.
Self-professed coward.
Yeah. And John Bradley does a great job.
Yeah.
Is he a coward? Yeah, I could see that. Is he likable? Yeah. Yeah, I can.
I'll actually say he's a little bit too uncowardly, but the likability kind of.
Yeah, works. When they're on the wall, because I'm a little bit afraid of heights, and he's kind of looking over the wall. And
as someone who doesn't like heights, he walks right up to the edge. Doesn't
I'd be like 2 meters from that point. Yeah, why don't you tell me about it, John? What does it look like? But he's been fantastic, and I'm really happy because they really needed to cast a good guy for that. But anyway, Mark Addy, I absolutely agree. And another thing is, he's what's supposed to be very important for the plot, and it does come up in the first season, in the first book, he's supposed to have jet black hair.
Yes. Yeah. Coal black.
And I didn't get the impression, even when he, as he's getting fat and he's getting older, that he's so old that it's gray.
No, it's still supposed to be black.
Black And we had the joke when Ned Stark,
Stark's looking through the book.
He's looking through the book, and it describes all of these Baratheons, and it's like black hair.
We're like, oh my god, that's not Robert Baratheon.
There's an imposter. They've swapped him.
Yeah.
And I think that he died.
Yeah.
And it gets into my. So we'll get into Yoren, but in a sec. But it gets into probably my least favorite casting was Renly Baratheon.
Yes.
And that Renly is supposed to be a young Robert.
Yes.
And he's supposed to be very charismatic, very handsome, very tall, very strapping. And I can see the actor that they cast as being a young Mark Addy, I guess.
Yeah,
I guess. Not a charismatic, strapping kind of guy. And I think that's going to... I'm kind of preempting or jump into predictions. That's going to be one that's going to hurt them later on.
He
is not charismatic. He is the kind of character that you don't even notice he's in the scene.
Yeah, exactly.
And Renly is supposed to be noticeable.
Yeah, and you both said it before. Like, there were a few scenes where I confused him and Littlefinger at the beginning.
Yeah,
and you shouldn't.
Oh, when he walks up, I remember there was maybe episode 9 or episode 8. He's walking up to Ned Stark, and I'm like, is that Littlefinger, or...
Yeah.
Oh, no, it's Renly.
And I was wearing my glasses. Yeah. Can't believe it. And it was like, Renly. I'm like, oh.
Yeah.
No, I believe, the first time we saw Renly, we watched was, episode, 2? Or episode 3, maybe? And it didn't even register with me that was supposed to be
Renly. And
they
gutted some scenes that could have given him a little bit of charisma as well, yeah. So...
And I'll say, maybe the actor is a fine actor, but they really did that character a disservice by doing what they did to him.
Yeah, I'm not saying that the actor is acting poorly.
No.
I'm saying he was miscast, and I'm sure he's doing everything the director... And, here's a little taste, a little foreshadowing. He's going to be in one of the worst scenes when we talk about it.
Yeah.
And I don't think that's either actor's fault. No. I think they're doing what they're supposed to.
Oh, and I kicked in the mic.
Yeah, mic's bouncing.
All right, sorry. And Yoren?
Actually, now that I think of it, all of these things we've said, they're really about just kind of miscasting, not about the actors themselves.
Oh, no.
Because Yoren is the same thing. In the book, he's described as a drunk, filthy, constantly smells
really
bad,
disgusting.
And the actor just isn't.
No.
It's not like he's a pretty boy or anything, but, he does, he's not.
Except the fact that he's not a hunchback.
Yeah.
And he actually looks...
He was good. I thought he was really good in episode 10, so I can see in the second season him being pretty good as Yoren, doing Yoren a service.
Yeah. And, Yoren also TV as a visual medium, too, you have to choose something.
There's got to be... Because Yoren... I ended up liking Yoren as a character.
Yeah.
Not that, that's a good evil character, but no, just that's a good...
Character.
He's a he's a nice guy.
Mm-hmm.
And I think you have to make him a little bit better looking. Not saying that they casted an Adonis for him, but a little bit better looking, a little cleaner, just so people can really get at the heart of the book character you want. Now, I agreed, and he was like, who is this, charming man?
Yeah, exactly.
He's 6'5".
Yeah.
But no, I've really come around to him.
I kind of like the actor. I'm not going to complain about who they cast for the part, but I was the one who brought up the fact that, kind of Tyrion doesn't have mismatched eyes, and that Yoren was supposed to be this kind of ugly, I imagine almost like a urine-soaked kind of guy.
That's how I imagined it.
And, I don't know, I think you're kind of missing the point where these horribly ugly guys are actually quite likable or quite stand-up guys when you get down to the heart of them, whereas someone like Joffrey, he was supposed to be this ultimately pretty boy, or Jaime is... Well, Jaime's a different story, but Joffrey's supposed to be this beautiful person.
And that was one of the reasons why I really thought he was
ugly.
Miscast, is
yeah.
He was supposed to be like an angel, beautiful on the outside and so evil
disgusting
on the inside.
And Yoren is
you didn't have that
contrast
with the actor that they cast, not saying that he looked evil on the outside.
Let's hope people don't go back and listen.
Please
to don't this podcast. But anyway, the point is I'm kind of I guess I've come around to Yoren, but I still kind of miss the fact.
Can I say something real cold?
Yeah.
In Hollywood, old is ugly.
Okay. Yeah.
And they've cast I don't know, he's an older guy, so therefore, ergo, he's ugly.
Yeah.
You know. And I think that's probably what they're doing. But the actor, I think he's got the right voice, which we've just complained about a little earlier. They haven't always done so. All right, and just any other worst casts?
No, I mean, like, I think they've done a very good job.
Yeah, casting me too. And I think as a special mention, I wouldn't say he really stood out as amazingly cast, but I think the actor has, again, like Jack Gleason with Joffrey. I think. Nicolaj Coster-Waldau for Jamie.
Oh, yeah.
I think
you've kind of warmed up to him, or he's kind of...
He's made Jamie his own.
Yeah.
He hasn't changed the way Jamie looks or even acts a little bit in the book.
Mm.
Like, when I read Jamie and how he does, he's still a different character.
Yeah.
But he's made Jamie his own, and he's kind of the rugged, handsome... I know they're trying to... And again, because it's a visual medium, you got to put more on the surface...
Mm.
So they're trying to make him more multi-dimensional straight away.
Right.
Whereas in the book, he seems to be pretty one-dimensional.
Yes.
And he's there as, like, a force or something. Yeah. But no, but I think he's making Jamie his own. So he's kind of stands apart. As not that he's been really well cast or really miscast, but he's just... They picked a guy who could be... Jamie.
Hmm.
And he's playing that Jamie as opposed to the book Jamie.
No comment on the great John?
No, because I mean...
Come on, that's not me. Really a... That's probably a scene.
Yeah, it's...
All right, let's switch to scenes.
Whoever wrote the scene kind of screwed that up, but...
They should have dubbed his laugh.
I don't know. The biggest scene screw-ups are...
All right,
as
so
you
let's
said
start.
Before,
negative, worst scenes.
Anything with the whore.
Or whores.
Whores.
Because
there's more than one.
Yeah. But they seem to be, like, that one prostitute seems to be getting around, because she seems to be appearing, like, she's been in a couple. And this has been a criticism of other people, is that they do a lot of exposition.
While two are having sex.
Basically, main characters are telling prostitutes.
Yeah.
History, or prostitutes are basically advising...
Telling main characters history.
Yeah, telling them stuff, like...
Makes me wonder what the screenwriters do.
Yeah, yeah. And these are all special to the TV series, like, or...
Yep.
They're not in the books, and except for the, like, a named character, like Shay, Tyrion and Shay, there was a lot of scenes between them.
Yeah.
But this one prostitute that they have that's been with Theon, perhaps was with Tyrion, I can't remember.
Yeah, I think she was with Tyrion.
And then she was with Grand Maester Pycelle and with Littlefinger.
Yeah.
Yeah, she's just nude. She's just for the series. And all of those scenes.
Maybe she's the director's girlfriend or something.
Maybe. I don't know. I had said before, like, the things that the characters are saying during these sex scenes are kind of... Granted, it's a different media, so you don't have the internal monologue that a character would have in a book. So maybe you don't have the history background that a viewer has that a reader does.
Mm-hmm.
So you need some way to show this. But I kind of found it insulting that they have to have these characters having sex, or some characters having sex, to kind of make the scene more interesting. Right, it's kind of like saying the history of this world or the things that are going on in this world aren't important enough to stand on their own, so let's spice it up with some tits and ass, essentially.
Yeah, no, I agree. I think that's a bit of a misstep on HBO's part, where they're like, yeah, we're going to show how
gritty
and gritty this world is, and that means prostitutes.
Yeah.
You know,
and some of the stuff that comes out of their mouths, and you're like, well, what would you got,
PhD
in history? And it's like, oh, my lord, you know.
Yeah, did you train
you
at the Citadel in Old Town?
It's like, yeah, that's one way of looking at it. Another way would be, just a second, I'll get this blackboard out.
Yeah.
This is you. I'm just drawing some relationships between everybody.
And it's weird, too, because, you know, that kind of exposition, we were talking about it before with the scenes between... Varys
and Littlefinger.
Those are excellent exposition.
And very Shakespearean, I thought. Yeah.
Despite not being in the book. But it's kind of, if they can write those kinds of scenes, why do they resort to kind of just spicing it up with all this? Well, why do they? The answer is obvious. It's HBO and they want to sell that. I mean, it's, you know, sad.
I mean, they could have given, like, Grand Maester Pycelle. And I'm not saying that's a chase character in the book. I mean, the guy does frequent prostitutes. Yeah, has relations with prostitutes. But why could they could have given him? I'd rather they've written in an adept or something, like just a servant, and he's just like prattling on to the servant, I think having the prostitute look bored in that boring scene, that was like, yeah, if she's bored, why do you think we're going to be interested? Because I didn't even want the prostitute in that scene. Yeah.
No, I see. Even an even bigger one was when Littlefinger was training
the two prostitutes.
Yeah. Because the only thing he said, the only thing that was important in that scene, was the fact that Eddard's brother, or essentially Littlefinger, fought for the honor of Bran Stark gave Littlefinger a scar, a giant scar.
Mm-hmm.
And that he then died.
Not necessarily, because that expedition, I thought it was actually pretty good from that.
I thought what Littlefinger did was,
it really gives him depth to the character.
But,
and, like, it was a good line, too. Like,
I think here's the good thing. I didn't like the scene either, but maybe I was just, after the turnip truck whore, I'll say, after inserting in that prostitute with the Theon Greyjoy character, which didn't need to be done at all, maybe I was just kind of soured on the prostitute
too.
Thing. So when you get there, you're like, oh, not again. And you're just, he's prattling on it, maybe because I've read the books, like, I know this.
Yeah.
And you're kind of like, well, maybe the people who haven't read the book need this. And the actor's doing a fine job, but you're like, I really did not need those two prostitutes. Mm. And you know that, as you know, a red-blooded North American male, to say, I did not need that lesbian scene. That's saying a lot.
Yeah. But I'm pretty sure Littlefinger already mentioned that Brandon Stark gave him a scar.
But if you notice, they've got to mention things a couple times, and I understand that, too.
They've
got to, like, just like Jamie's got to make an appearance in episode 10, and it's just, hey, Jamie's still around.
Yeah.
Or Jamie making an appearance in every single...
Yeah.
It's like...
Remember
when King Robert is talking to Barristan Selmy?
Oh, and then it's like, oh, hey, bring in Jamie!
Come on, because we've paid for this actor. Gosh darn it, we're going to put him in every scene.
Yeah.
It's like Ned Stark walking to the council and, oh, hey, Jamie, hey, how's it going?
Yeah, I think it's in this contract. He has to be at least in, like, 5 scenes in every episode.
I don't know.
It seems that way.
I understand that, just with the nature of, you have a cat, two natures. You have the actor's contract. You've kind of paid for him. And they're taking time off from other jobs they can do, of course.
So if you
and then the... you also have, we've got to keep reminding the audience that Jaime Lannister is a character.
Right.
And that we need to, you know.
Let's be honest, if you go by the book, he only needed to be in about, what, 2 scenes?
Yeah, probably? Pretty much, yeah.
Well, anyway.
So they added a lot in for him.
Yeah,
they did.
So anyway, worst scene, Chris?
Worst?
Or best. Best, we kind of talked a lot about worst.
Sorry, go ahead.
Oh, jeez. Let me think about it.
Worst scene, I think, is probably...
Tough, because there's so many bad ones.
Maybe Renly and Loras together. The reason why I was hesitant, because I actually think that's a good scene for Loras. Loras Tyrell, the Knight of Flowers.
Knight of Flowers.
Knight of Flowers. I think that's a good scene for him to show that he's a little bit crafty. Mm. But then Renly comes across as someone who's afraid of blood and very anti-war.
Mm.
Loras and Renly are gay, and if you had only read the book, the first book, then I think that would be a bit of a spoiler.
Yes,
because you certainly wouldn't have picked that up in the first book. But in season one, they've made it
very explicit.
Very explicit, and I don't even think even in there are hints in the second book that they have a relationship.
Right.
I don't know. It seems like more and more characters know that they're gay as the series goes along. But so I didn't mind that they said, okay, these two are gay, these two are lovers. That's fine. That's good. That kind of sets up, and I think that's going to pay off in season two. But then they basically really unmanned Renly.
Yes, yes.
And they also made it, like, he's against war. He's afraid of blood.
Right.
I think they're trying to play in I'm all about the people,
which doesn't really work.
Which doesn't work, but maybe if he had still been as charismatic and that's
just it.
Like, it could have worked.
He's not charismatic.
It could have worked if he had all the other things. If he had been Renly in the other areas, but he's kind of whiny, as you said when you were complaining, Wayne. So you can't imagine this guy being any sort of leader. And then Loras is saying, oh, yeah, but we would follow you. Right. But you're like, what?
No, you wouldn't. No, you wouldn't follow this whiny guy who's afraid of blood and obviously doesn't know how to hold a sword. And in the scene where he's hunting with Robert, he's like, oh, we have to go hunting with Robert.
Oh,
and it's like,
Robert. He's like, oh, is this when we're doing our wars again? Ah, you know, that's so
whoever
distracting.
Whoever wrote that series really did a disservice to the character.
Did a disservice to the character. And I'll say, like, in the books, gay does not mean that you are... a wimp.
No.
You know, so...
Why did they have to do that?
Now, Loras is still... I think still Loras, so that's good. And I think they've done a really good job with him, but they kind of just made Renly a wimp.
Yeah.
I think Renly's naive. In the books, Renly is naive.
But he's not a wimp.
But he's not a wimp. And he has... He doesn't have a real experience with war.
No, he doesn't.
But he has a very romanticized opinion of war. He's not anti-war by any means. He just doesn't really understand. He doesn't have experience. He actually thinks it's really easy and hesitate to say, but like fun.
Yeah.
Whereas here he's like, that's war, terrible. Yeah. And the little people suffer. You know, if they want to add that to Renly to make him more like, oh, he's kind of the Democrat of the group, that's fine, I guess.
But did they have to make him such a wimp?
Yeah. And I think of all the things, because that's, I think, going to backfire in season 2.
Yes. Yes.
Where Renly's got to kind of step
up. Unless they have a miraculous change, unless they do some kind of miraculous change, it's going to be very awkward and it's just not going
to
work.
Right. Like, Renly's not supposed to be like a little finger crafty guy. He's not supposed to be...
He's supposed to be a young Robert.
He's supposed to be a young Robert without Robert's actually martial abilities. Mm. But as far as you could prop him up, because somewhat of a spoiler, people who are actual soldiers and generals buy into Renly and believe that he is kind of the real deal.
Yeah.
So he is supposed to convince people that he is supposed to be a young Robert. And he will not convince anybody.
Yeah, the character in the series will not convince anybody.
And it's not a knock against the actor.
No.
Not a knock against the actor, because he I think, is doing exactly what he's being directed to do.
Yeah, I think it's the writer and director.
And hopefully they're hiding the books from him, because he's like, hold on.
Yeah.
Hold on.
Awesome.
I'm actually like, what about this funny line I'm supposed to say? And it's
why
like,
this guy shaved my armpit? We didn't need to do that.
like a little bit off track.
I understand. It's like, okay, the shaving the chest. But, you know, if I had a boyfriend, I think I'd be shaving that beard. Number one, before I shave the chest, but, you know, that's just me. The actor they got for Loras, I think, is going to really pay off. I think he looks the part.
Yeah.
He seems to be doing it. And the guy they got, Lancel, in season 10, they took that pink beret off him.
Yes.
He stopped looking like, he looks like a pretty boy.
Yes.
As opposed to looking like a woman.
Yeah.
And that's fantastic.
I was not that I was happy to see his ass in episode 10, but I was happy to see that he looked a bit more manly.
Yeah,
in episode 10.
I'm pretty interested to see where that goes, because Lancel, not one of my favorite characters, but he's a good character, yeah. And a good character that has a lot of development.
Hmm.
Yeah. I don't want to say he grows as a character, but he certainly changes.
Yeah.
And I'd like to see what that actor does with that. Eugene Simon or something.
Yeah, it's
number one worst scene. There's other scenes you can quibble about.
Yeah.
But...
Chris?
Probably the tournament and the lack of people there.
It was a bit disappointing, eh?
I remember, like, when we started this season, you know, Lyle and I had read the books, and we were like, oh, that scene's going to be awesome, and then get it, and it's like, it looks like a fucking Renaissance fair. There's about 10 people there.
You know, it's funny, because I'll take the first book, and I'll take my top three favorite scenes, and one was the tournament, and that was... A little disappointing.
A little.
And you're like, when you have to tell yourself, oh, well, you know, they've got a budget, but you know, you're telling yourself that?
And see, I was going to excuse them all the way up until episode 8 or 9 when Ned Stark got beheaded, because in that, it looks like there's a huge crowd.
That's true. I hadn't thought of that, but it does.
And, I mean, they did the same way. They did lots of tight shots. They showed
blocking
an area running through all things, and people are over the place, and they showed like the heads. So they just had a few heads filling the bottom of the frame, and they pulled it off. They could have done that with the tournament.
Yeah, no, I agree.
Yeah, they could have.
They did that kind of a wide shot, and you see that there are...
People stacked there are like about three deep.
Two dozen people at this major event, and it's just basically the one list.
Yeah. Which is kind of sad, too, because...
I expected, like, there's another place for the melee, and it's kind of...
Yeah, the archery
quite a lot of space.
Yeah.
It's supposed to be huge.
I was picturing, like, a Colosseum kind of thing for it.
And there's hardly anybody in the even in the stands. Yeah. Not to, you know, you talk with.
Which is too bad, because that was one of my big scenes. Between Joffrey's tournament and Robert's. You know, Robert's supposed to be such a big deal, and Joffrey's is not.
Yeah, we were joking about that. We're like, yeah, it's like, wow, we what are we going to have, like, less than a dozen? Yeah, we didn't have the tens of people that were at King Robert's. So that was one scene that I really wanted to see. The other scene was between the Hound and Sansa.
As I brought up before.
And basically they took all the lines where the Hound reveals a little bit about his childhood, and they gave him all the Littlefinger.
Right.
And as much as I really liked the Littlefinger, Aidan Gillen, and the Littlefinger character in the TV series, I really wish they had not done that, because they basically robbed Rory McCain, who's playing the Hound. They basically robbed him of a very good scene.
Yes.
And that was basically the Hound's biggest scene, where you have the in the first book, where you get a little bit of insight at who the Hound is.
Mm. Right.
He and they basically had Littlefinger telling Sansa about, it could have almost word for word, about what happened to the Hound when he was a kid and how he got burned.
Mm-hmm.
And that just completely took it away, where the Hound tells Sansa. And I thought, when you see that scene, that really strengthened the Hound and Sansa's connection.
Yeah.
And that's important in the second season or in the second book. And now you don't have that connection.
Even at the end of the first book, how I said, when Joffrey leads Sansa up to the wall to show her father's head, I was under the impression, maybe I'm wrong, that the Hound, before they go up, kind of leans down and says, just give him what he wants. This will go a lot easier for you. And then they go up and look at the heads. Mm-hmm. And they took that away from him as well. Granted, they put it in at the end, but the fact that they took away that initial scene between Sansa and the Hound, where he tells her his history, I don't know. I think they did that actor a big disservice by they're making that character kind of very one-dimensional. They're taking away all his good lines.
I still think that they're going to, just like in the books, they're going to flesh him out later on.
Yeah, but I don't know, as we had said before, why drop in all these other extraneous scenes which don't do anything when you have all these good scenes that you have taken out?
And also, it's like, you obviously wanted the lines, because you just gave it to
another
actor.
Yeah, you gave it to another actor. Another
and the thing is, you've paid for it, because I know they gave lines for to Tyrion, or Peter Dinklage, that's the blacksmith of the Night's Watch had.
Mm-hmm.
And they gave him to Tyrion to say to Jon Snow.
So you didn't have to pay for another actor.
Yeah, so I guess you don't have to pay for the blacksmith actor. But you've already...
the Hound's right there. The Hound's in the scene. He's right behind him. Yeah.
It's like...
Why not just have him say it?
Was it going to cost that much more to give him those lines? So, and my third favorite part of the book, which wasn't in the series, was Ned Stark's flashbacks.
Or any flashbacks.
Flashback where he goes to the...
That's probably just a decision.
Yeah. Where he faces down the... Yeah, and I'm wondering what this decision is going to do. Because in the first book, Ned Stark has flashbacks where they have the three Night's Guard.
Kingsguard. The three Kingsguard.
Sorry, Kingsguard. And Ned Stark's with six companions.
Right.
So there's seven of them. One of them being Howland Reed. And they have a really good exchange. You know, so it begins. So it ends.
Yeah.
And that's really good, and I think that's actually a really important scene, because it has a lot of foreshadowing that even Wayne and I, who have read up to A Feast for Crows, we don't actually know the real answer, but we certainly
know there's a question.
Yeah, we certainly suspect that something's going on, and that the answer will come from this character, Howland Reed.
Mm-hmm.
So they haven't introduced him at all. And admittedly, four books in, Howland Reed is... doesn't have any lines.
Right.
He doesn't say anything. But he's referred to. So people have... I mean, we've come to the conclusion, and other people have come to the conclusion, is Howland Reed's got an answer to an important question.
Mm-hmm.
Or he's the only survivor at this...
Yeah, now that Ned, at, now that
what
Ned
happened
is dead.
There,
yeah.
He's
yeah.
the only surviving member, because they killed the three... Well, they haven't shown the flashback, so it doesn't matter to people. They killed the three Kingsguard. They're not there.
Right.
Ned Stark and Howland Reed were the only other survivors, and now Ned's dead. And Ned was having the flashback, so what are they going to do? Are they going to introduce Howland Reed? Now, I can understand, but we were talking about, maybe they didn't want to pay for the actor for Howland Reed. Maybe Martin said, hold off.
Yeah.
You know, Howland Reed's going to be important by the fifth book, or the sixth book, so let's make sure we really get a good guy for that.
Mm.
But you could have not shown Howland Reed, or kind of had him in the background for that. And it just at least set that scene. Just so they know, like, I was there with Hal and Reed. And,
yeah, like, even...
He could add
even,
a Weiser, I don't know.
Even name drop, right? Yeah. Even name drop this name.
He could have told the story to somebody. To Varys. When Varys came down, like he does in the book, he could have said, you know, oh, this is crazy, you know, I remember, blah, 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 blah.
Yeah, you could have said it without showing any visuals. I'm just
wondering. Seven of us rode against the three, and only two of us came back. Me and Hal and Reed.
Yeah, Hal and Reed. Who was that? Yeah, Hal and Reed.
Yeah, write that. R-E-E-D.
I'm wondering if it's... It might feel as if, like, it's just bad writing when this guy suddenly drops in with the answer to this question. It's like, well, it might feel like, oh, you just wrote that in so that we could get an answer to this question.
I wonder if it's going to be something like...
I don't know.
Where another character goes... Oh, go to Hal and Reed, and they're like, Hal and Reed?
Yeah,
who's that? No, they won't say, who's that? Yeah. They'll go, oh, but he's kind of a minor guy. No, he's not. You know, he was with my father when the seven of them, like, they might do it, like, season three or four. Like, they'll basically explain the story. Mm. Whereas, it was actually a really good exchange. Like, it was, like, high drama. Mm. It's like, I'm surprised you weren't at the battle. You know, we were ordered here. I'm surprised you didn't bend the knee or...
Our knees do not bend so easily.
Yeah, and it's such a nice exchange. Mm. It would have been good for Sean Bean and then the Dane pulls, you know, Sword of the Morning, pulls the sword and he's like, well, so it begins. And then Ned Stark, you know, Sean Bean gets, if he had it in his contract, he always says something like, the best line of every scene, he's got the best line because he goes, now it ends. Yeah, maybe they hid the books from Sean Bean, too. Because he's like, whoa,
you know what I think they did? I think they hid the books from the writers, except for the first one. It's like, here's the first book. Write it. Right? And then, I don't know. It's like, yeah, this is important, this is important, this is important. Now they're reading the second book. Now they're like, oh, shit.
Oh, man, that really...
Oh, man. Oh, that's what happened? Ah, fuck. We just fucked up our own story.
You have one hooker per scene.
Yeah, Renly's going to have to man up a bit. Man up a bit. Maybe have him, like... Skinning
grow
a deer.
A pair?
Skinning a deer. That worked for Tywin Lannister.
Yeah, like, that was a good scene. I like that.
It was a good scene.
Yeah, it's, you know, sorry, not to steal it again, but the funny thing is, okay, Tywin Lannister skinning a deer in the fucking tent that he sleeps in? What the fuck? Like, I watched it again. He pulls out the deer's guts and then just chucks him on the floor. It's like, aren't there, like, nice rugs on the floor? What, so now you're going to go to sleep in a tent that smells like deer shit and blood? No.
Was his bed and stuff in there? All
no, but it was a very nicely appointed tent. Why don't you skin that shit outside?
Because he's a Lannister.
Exactly. So why wouldn't you go, I've killed this deer.
Do you really need to have a cape made out of gold?
No, exactly. If he's so fucking rich, you skin this deer for me.
Yeah, exactly.
You have someone else skin it.
Unless he likes to.
Yeah, but I don't know. Skinning inside the tent...
Have you felt the viscereal power?
No, I haven't, but neither have I slept in a tent made of cloth of gold, right?
With deer guts on the floor.
With deer guts on the floor. That's got to be awkward. I don't know.
That didn't bother me.
I don't know.
It didn't bother me watching it, but afterwards you're like, why was he skinning his own deer? Because he's like a lord, and... Why was he skinning it in his own tent?
Yeah, exactly.
You know, that's kind of dirty.
Yeah.
But also, it's funny because they took that from Randall Tarly scene where he's skinning the deer.
As he says, you're going to have an accident.
Yeah, which is like really chilling.
Yeah.
And it's like, again, maybe it's like, well, we don't want to pay for the actor for Randall Tarly just yet. So
I can see that one, like, man, because that's a cool scene. I can see them saying, like, I want to put the scene in, but we don't have the budget to film another castle, another king, so let's give it to this guy who isn't.
I guess.
Right. All they would have needed was wood. It was the casting of Randall Tarly.
Yeah.
Because they would have had to, like, basically, Randall Tarly, well, you would see him and should see him in season two.
Yes,
and
you should.
You will see him in season
possibly
four?
three and four, too.
Maybe. Well, yeah, I think if... Season 5, maybe, because I think Storm of Swords are going to be too soon.
I don't know how they're...
But anyway, you should see him in Season 2, but then, yeah, I don't know what they're going to...
He's a pretty regular minor character.
Nah, maybe he won't make an appearance until Season 5 or something.
At least they've...
And I can understand that. You don't want to have, like, an actor.
Right.
And then, who doesn't really make an appearance for several seasons later, because then you're like, what if the actor dies or something?
Just isn't available.
It's not available,
Can't keep a guy in contract for 3 years.
Yeah.
But it's an amazing scene. It's a better scene in the book because of what he's saying, the threats he's saying to Samwell. But yeah, I didn't mind that, but it was kind of funny. It's like, A, Tywin Lannister wouldn't clean his own deer. And Tywin Lannister would have enough sense not to clean his own deer.
In his own fucking tent.
It's like, Unless he like comes with a deer strapped on the back of his horse, and everybody's like, "Looks like I'm going to be cleaning deer guts
again."
Yeah, and it's like,
I love it. The reason I like that scene, I told you guys before, is because kind of he's getting under the skin of Jamie. It's a really metaphorical scene, so I thought that was good for that reason.
It was fine. I think there was a little bit too much quivering on Jamie's part.
Yeah, I think.
And it's a visual medium, and he's like that. Yeah, basically. Oh, you wound me.
Like,
and it was like,
deer.
It's like the armor's on the outside. I get hurt inside. That. You know, I don't have armor over my ears. I heard that. Whereas I think Jamie is kind of whether or not you see if you know all those barbs prick Jamie, you don't see that for a while. He's pretty
one-dimensional.
One cool customer, let's say. Like he's even when you start to see dimensions, it's like, well, what really gets to this guy? You kind of don't know.
Was the line in the that he said in just our most recent episode 10, was that his real line?
No, you
she said, because of men like you, there aren't men like me.
I'll say not a spoiler, but I'm pretty sure once Jamie gets captured in the Whispering Wood, you don't see him again.
That's why Wayne and I were like, oh no, they're not doing it. Because they basically took stuff from the second book. And they put it into
the end of episode 10.
And I can understand.
You got to build up the end of that one for the next season. That's basic TV.
The dragons and the Night's Watch marching
weren't
out.
Weren't enough?
I thought they did a really good job with the Night's Watch. They're like, yeah, we're going.
Yeah, we're going out. I liked that with the Night's Watch.
I'm like, that's really cool. And actually, that was so cool. Like, the Night's Watch marches out of the wall, and we're going ranging in force.
The dragons thing, huh?
And I was like, then they switched to the dragons, and I was like, oh yeah, the dragons are supposed to end the book. Yeah.
There's a couple scenes.
Because I thought the Night's Watch thing was so cool.
Yeah, I thought that was going to be the dragons? Like, then when they switch back, I'm like, oh, that's right.
You know what they should have done? They should have run both scenes at the same time and cut back and forth between them to let each scene build its own tension.
Yeah.
Well, like, it could end that, or could it end up like Phantom Menace?
Yeah.
What, four different things happening?
Sounds good.
Or you know, like the end of Return of the Jedi. And we're talking about Star Wars again.
Yeah, we are.
Alright. No, but there's another scene when they killed Ned Stark. That scene was really, really, really good. They built it up so well because everything was happening so fast. And like I was getting little prickles in the back of my neck. Like, it was all coming together really. But they switched to that really popular thing in Hollywood recently where they just kind of cut everything into slow motion. The sword came down really slow. And
I didn't mind that, actually.
See, I thought the tension of the scene had built up to a really good crescendo with that speed. And I think they should have just gone thunk and cut his head off right there. I think it would have made it better. Not that it was a bad scene because of that, but besides that, it was really built up really well.
So that's pretty decent scene. Any other good scenes? I really like the prologue.
Oh yeah,
that was amazing. And the actors they got for that were fantastic. And it's unfortunate that they all have to die.
Can I just make an observation? I think it's kind of sad for the series as a whole that one of the favorite scenes was the prologue, which was the first five minutes.
Because that entices you. It's like a book. You got to hook them in the beginning, and you got to have something good at the end, so people have a nice memory.
I agree. You got to hook them. You can have some stuff in the middle.
It's like
but
a second.
I don't know the fact that stuff in the middle.
You're too hard on it, man. You're way too hard on it.
Like the Littlefinger Varys exchanges are good.
Yeah.
Like that's just two good actors going at each other. I think I prefer the second exchange more. It was just funnier, and it just seemed really, really Shakespearean. Where it kind of, I don't know, it just gives you a little treat.
Yeah, it was just a fun verbal parlay that they did. It was great.
I'm honored that you're thinking so much what's between my legs.
I agree, those
Do you stay awake at night worrying about my
gash? Yeah. That's really, really good. Those are some of my favorite scenes.
Cinematographically,
episode 1, I was checking forums. People were going on about Tyrion, and it was like, oh, he should get the Emmy? Whatever. Is he good?
I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, he's been good in all the scenes, but I can't think that they've been terribly memorable.
Mm.
Whereas Littlefinger's been pretty amazing. And
I just remembered. Can I say, sorry to interrupt.
Another good scene?
No, the worst scene. I don't have good scenes. I have scenes that are okay and scenes that sucked. And the scene that sucked, Catelyn Tully and Tyrion in the inn where she calls in all her bannermen.
Oh, pshaw.
Really? What was... Oh,
because he's like, the is that the red horse of Bracken I see? And the guy stands up, completely black jerkin. And how about the Twin Towers of Frey? Another completely black leather jerkin. It's like, how the fuck are you seeing those symbols? They're not there!
We're all watching it, and I'm like, is it my eyes? I can't make out...
I thought the same thing.
Gray and brown, and it's... And then we're, like, talking afterwards, and it's like, yeah, I couldn't make out anything.
See anything. It's like, man, how did you see those symbols at all? They weren't fucking there.
Yeah, my lady's eyes are sharp. Indeed.
For I'm not wearing my symbols.
Yeah. It's actually underneath. There it is.
Yeah. Are those the buck teeth of Frey that I see?
Yeah, that's funny. Sorry. I actually have a really good scene. I've just... I'm just drawing a blank because you cut me off.
Sorry.
As you do.
Some of the cinematography is really good in it.
You talk about cinematography there while people are waiting for my best scene.
Sorry. Ouch. Let him finish!
When they were filming Joffrey on the throne, they used like a really wide-angle lens, so all of his features are really extended. He looked really alien and mean. That was cool. When called his verdict, where one of the guys went to die, they panned down from the top of the throne to behind it. It's kind of like this jagged black.
Oh no, that was at the end of episode 8 when Sansa agrees to Ned.
Well, how about when they had like Littlefinger in front of the throne?
Yeah,
and he looked so small. The only time Littlefinger actually looks small in comparison to some of the actors. That's another thing, is they've cast actors who aren't terribly big. Of course, the Hound is big. The guy they got for.
Clegane.
Yeah, which is weird because he is an enormous person, but he doesn't really look that big.
No, Gregor Clegane, he actually doesn't look that
big.
I mean, he's a 7-foot tall guy, but...
He looks big.
Well, it's just hard to tell. Like, when you see...
It's hard to tell.
Yeah, when you see
Conan Stevens, and you'll see that guy. That's a big man.
Like, that's the thing. I'm not saying he's not enormous. Big.
Doesn't look that big.
Like, Drogo looked enormous. Yeah. He was taller than all the people around him, and they showed...
How are they filming that side of the world?
They just filmed it warmer.
Yeah, because I was asking you about that. Because Chris studied filmmaking, for people that know. It sometimes seemed that the people were separated from the background more so. I don't know. It seemed like more of a TV quality as opposed to a movie quality.
Like I said, they're using different kinds of films between the North and the South. Like the North had kind of a warm, like Kodak kind of hue. Or, I'm sorry, the South did, and whereas the North, they used this really grainy stuff that was really cold, had a bluish cast to it, so you can really feel the difference between the scenes. In the Dothraki Sea, there was, I don't know, it seemed it had more color, even than the South did. 45? Do it.
And we just noticed the time.
Holy crap!
Yeah.
We need to go celebrate Chris's bachelor party, so we have to dash. So tune in for part 2, where we'll finish off best scenes and worst scenes. I guess if you're taking a cue from Wayne, I guess emphasis on worst scenes.
Yes, I have.
And we'll also be looking at our overall impressions, and we'll talking a little bit about the Song of Ice and Fire role playing game by Green Run, and our impressions of that.
Right.
I think we're doing predictions of season 2.
And we're also going to be doing predictions of season 2, okay. Without doing too many spoilers. But I think our biggest prediction was Renly.
Yeah.
But still tune into part 2.
Yeah.
Thanks for joining us again on Idle Red Hands, and we got to run. See ya. Bye.
Bye.
Idle Red Hands, recorded in Kobe, Japan. See us online at www.idleredhands.com. Music provided by Tripod Jimmy, and the song was Roadkill. Hope you enjoyed it. See you next time.